ॐ नमः श्रीयति राजाय विवेकानन्दसूरये सच्चित्सुखस्वरूपाय स्वामिने तापहारिणे.
స్వామి వివేకానందాస్ జ్ఞానయోగ వన్ ఆఫ్ ది మోస్ట్ వండర్ఫుల్ టాక్స్ హీ హ్యాడ్ గివెన్ బోత్ ఇన్ న్యూయార్క్ ఇన్ ది ఇయర్ 1896 యాజ్ వెల్ యాజ్ ఇన్ లండన్. దీస్ ఆర్ వెరీ స్పెషల్ టాక్స్. స్వామీజీ ఫస్ట్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ టేక్స్ అప్ ది సబ్జెక్ట్ వెదర్ రిలీజియన్ ఈజ్ రియల్లీ నెసెసిటీ ఫర్ హ్యూమన్ లైఫ్, ఇఫ్ ఇట్ ఈస్ వై, ఆర్ can we do without religion altogether? Why do we need to discuss this subject? Because nowadays there are plenty of people who feel religion was an ancient superstition. It served some purpose in the past when we did not have so much of knowledge and we were steeped in ignorance. But now what religion could do, science can do much better than that. Swamiji demolishes that theory that we can ever do away with religion. Before that, let me just outline. There are 20 talks. When we open the book Jnana Yoga, you will find there are 20 talks. Of these, 6 talks were given at the beginning of 1896 in New York, and 14. Of the 14, 4 talks are on what later on was labeled as practical Vedanta. It comes down to 10 lectures. And the first of these is the necessity of religion. This talk was delivered on June 7th, 1896 at the Royal Institute of Painters in Watercolors, 191 Piccadilly. So let us discuss this subject, the necessity of religion. Throughout, I will be quoting Swamiji's and adding my own thoughts. Of all the forces that have worked and are still working to mold the destinies of the human race, none certainly is more potent than that, the manifestation of which we call religion. All social organizations have as a background somewhere the workings of that peculiar force and the greatest cohesive impulse ever brought into play amongst human units has been derived from this power, which is religion. It is obvious to all of us that in every many cases the bonds of religion have proved stronger than the bonds of race or climate or even of descent. So Swamiji's approach to the subject is very, very rational, scientific, very illuminating. Of all the forces, what does it mean? Force. We are all, whether we know it or not, been compelled to follow, to obey certain forces which are all around us. What exactly does Swami Vivekananda mean by the word forces? At least 11 forces have been identified. What are they? Social, cultural, geographical, linguistic, political, and economical. I grouped these 6 into the upper category. Then comes intellectual, scientific, aesthetic, moral, and ethical, and lastly, religious. What are these forces? Force means that which compels us, that which forces us, that which makes us do in spite of ourselves. Of all these forces, and all these forces bind a human being. They bring us together. Linguistic basis, social basis, economical basis, or cultural basis, intellectual basis, scientific basis, they all bring us together. All of them have done some good and also have done very much of harm. You just look at any political development of any particular country, you will see what you call parochialism, a my person. Whether they are rational or irrational, that is a completely different matter. We are all gathered here to listen to this talk. Is there any force compelling you to bring you here? Yes. Do you know what is the name of that force? Ramakrishna is the force. Spirituality is the force. Religion is the force. This is the force which we are all, from birth to death, under the compulsion of some force or the other. Of all these forces, there is one force. These are all from, most of them are from outside, excepting two. The moral, the ethical, and the religious are, another name for that is spiritual. These are internal forces. All the other things are external forces that bring us together. It is very good because man, as Aristotle says, is a social animal. For most people, it is true. A monk is an exception because a monk is an unsocial animal. No, we wouldn't say that unsocial. We know what we say? Asocial. Not antisocial, but we do not need it. One who has gone beyond the need for society, for company, etc. I'm talking about truly contemplative person. What is it that brings people together, keeps them together, in spite of having almost numberless differences? Even if there is slight difference between two persons, it is impossible to bring them together. You just see husband and wife, parents and children. What is it that keeps them together? If you see, each individual is totally different. But yet, they are all kept together. You can say it is a social bond. You can say it is a scriptural bond. You can say it is a compulsion for safety. Every force has a positive effect, a negative effect. But of all the forces, the greatest force, and which none has been excelled by any other force, is that of religion. In the name of religion, man is ready to die, and man is ready to slit the throats of any number of people. We see it crystal clear now. That's what Swami Vivekananda was so beautifully expressing. Swamiji then goes to answer this question, is religion a necessity? Perhaps it was a necessity at a particular time of the growth of people. You know, like a crutch is necessary so long as we are unable to walk. But the moment we gain the strength to walk all by ourselves, then naturally the crutch will be left behind. Or the scaffolding of a building, as soon as the building is completed, then the scaffolding can be safely discarded. In fact, it has to be done. Is it in that sense that religion was necessary at a particular time of the growth of society? And now that the society has grown, whether it has grown strong, whether it has grown weak, whether it has grown for the better or for the worse, that is a different issue altogether. But now we think that we have progressed so much, we can rely upon without any religion. We will discuss this point later on. So is it? No. Swami Vivekananda wants to tackle this question from the very beginning. So he starts. Next point is, various attempts have been made to trace the beginnings of religion. And of all these traces, two theories have gained some acceptance amongst modern scholars. Of course, he was talking about the scholars of his time. How many years now before? 121 years. This talk was given in 1896, June 7th. So it is almost 121 years back. Two theories. What is it? One, the spirit theory of religion, and the other, the evolution of the idea of the infinite. What does it mean? One party maintains that ancestor worship in the beginning of religious ideas, but the other thinks that religion originates in the personification of the powers of nature. Out of that came the growth we call religion. Then Swamiji goes on to deal, not elaborately, but in a smaller detail, about these two theories, the spirit theory and the theory of the forces of nature. First, we find very clear traces of this ancestor worship being the beginning of religion. Every human body contained in it another being very similar to it. And when a man died, this double went out of the body and yet lived on But the life of the double lasted only so long as the dead body remained intact. For if any portion of the external body was hurt, the double would be correspondingly injured. This is clearly ancestor worship. Among the ancient Hindus also, we find traces of this ancestor worship. In fact, the only religion that can really be said to flourish in China is that of ancestor worship. Thus it seems, on the one hand, a very good position is made out for those who hold the theory of ancestor worship as the beginning of religion. Interestingly, you know, those who are very fond of visiting places, if you go to Egypt, you will see the pyramids. What are pyramids? The bodies of pharaohs are very powerful people in that ancient Egyptian times. They were kept intact. You know, they used to embalm so that the body will not deteriorate, degenerate or spoil in such a way. So they have two theories. The first theory is every human being has a double. What we see here is this animal is human being, and its better double is in some other world, and that better body and this manifested body have a very close relationship. And if first of all, that is the better body and this is very limited type of body. Second, if anything happens to this body, suppose somebody loses a hand, instantaneously the other also will lose its hand. To what horror this type of belief has led, you only have to read the descriptions. Whenever these pharaohs died, do you know what they did? They used it to take all his wives, all his slaves, all his servants, all his money, gold, everything, take it into the pyramids, seal them there while alive, and then come out. Not only that, because they used to keep so much of treasures, you know, gold, etc., then the people, somebody should be there, some worker should be there to construct that pyramids. And they know the secrets. And they were so clever. Even today, some new tombs are being discovered, and they believe there are somewhere some powerful pharaohs who are buried along with incalculable treasure. If they could somehow ferret them out, they become very clever. So those people who use it to construct, and very clever people, even the construction of a pyramid itself remained a mystery for a long time. Not only for the enormous structures that they did, but it is said that between one stone and the other stone, you cannot pass a pen knife. It is so finely chiseled and put together. And very clever. They use it to bury, after the construction is over, all the workers would be buried so that their secrets will not go out anywhere. What is important is, all of them had that belief that this human body is only very limited manifestation of their real body. Their real body is somewhere, but the fate of that real body is totally dependent upon this present body. This is only one expression of ancestor worship. But the deeper point we have to understand is, still Hindus, you know, they have created a whole new world for their ancestors. Pitruloka. So all our ancestors, poor fellows, you know, what an injustice we are doing. Even if they had worshipped God and want to attain liberation, we would not allow them to escape from our clutches. They have to be waiting for us, so that when we go to that Father's world, then we will be meeting them and enjoying them. This is the poverty of our thinking. We think that all of our ancestors are extremely virtuous people, because only virtuous people would go to that special world of, it's a kind of heaven. How many rascals, thieves and cheaters were there among our ancestors? Only God knows. We all worship, you know, we all cherish, just because they are our ancestors. Anyway, in China, Swamiji refers, and says there are no definite progress in those days, even today. accepting this ancestor worship. And in Japan, at least I know that ancestor worship, nature worship, these two are extremely prevalent. And later on, Buddhism also had become one of the forces. That's one country in Japan, and that includes China also, where two, the native religion and the Buddhism which came from India, both have blended so well. Most often, most people follow both the religion simultaneously. Swamiji wants to us to understand what is the beginning of religion. Ancestor worship. Why ancestor worship? Here is a man, he has become old, an accident happened, and he died. Then why worship him? Maybe he was useless person. Maybe he was completely powerless person, helpless person, weak person. Why worship him? Because behind that ancestor worship, there is that lurking feeling. If he can be alive, the implication is, I also could be alive. That means what? What we call the physical death is no barrier at all. That is the idea. This is called the survival instinct. This is called the survival instinct. But instinctively, every creature wants to live on and on and on. How long? As long as possible. It is not merely surviving. There is also something embedded with the idea of the survival instinct. Progressively develop more and more and even more happiness until we have no idea that there could be higher happiness than this. That means infinite happiness. These two instincts, and Hindu definition of God is this. Sat, Chit and Ananda. Sat, Chit, Ananda. The word Chit stands in between. So what is Sat? Eternal life. What is Ananda? Infinite happiness. So why Chit in between? If we are not aware, then we will not know we are alive, much less we are happy or unhappy. Even to know that not only I want to live, but I want to be aware that I am alive. That is the instinct. First theory. What is it? The worship of the ancestors. The second theory. Swamiji is now dealing with that. The dawn, the evening, the hurricane, the stupendous gigantic forces of nature, its beauties, these have exercised the human mind and it aspires to go beyond to understand something about them. Every attempt ends by these phenomena becoming abstractions, whether personalized or not. So also it is found with the ancient Greeks. Their whole mythology is simply this abstracted nature worship. We come to a better view of the beginnings of religion. What is it? The dawn, the evening, the hurricane, the stupendous and gigantic forces of nature and its beauties. These have exercised the human mind and are still exercising the human mind. Interesting part is, are you aware of the dawn, dusk? Are you aware of the vast, stupendous forces? You will never be able to do that unless at least you have one time experience. Simple example, 10-15 years back there was a terrible tsunami in Indonesia where within minutes 200,000 people have been swept alive into their death. You must have definitely seen the videos of these phenomena. Even seeing that phenomena evokes tremendous amount of fear. And for all our scientific this thing, even a simple accident, if it happens, it creates tremendous amount of fear. Now, if we really try to understand what is fear, what is fear? I am going to die. I am going to lose something. And instinctively we react. We never react to instinctive living. Why am I living? I should have been dead. That we never think. Why am I so happy? Have you ever complained about happiness? Why is it? Because to live and to be happy is our nature. What is instinct? To be close to our nature, that is what we call instinct. to survive is instinctual. But the curious phenomena is we also want to kill. Not thinking for a moment that that creature which we are going to kill has also that instinct to escape. What are these two? Whenever we encounter not only our ancestors who are living, you know, a huge tiger, mammoth, coming across them, and death is absolutely certain, and survival is very, very difficult. Even at that time, we think that, oh, man thinks, is there any force which can help me under these circumstances? Even today, what are you going to do? Suppose a man has got, the doctor comes, smilingly declares, you have 6 months only to live, you have got advanced cancer. Tell me, what is your instinct? The doctors have given up hope. What is your hope? There is only one hope. Is there any force? Is there any power? Is there any being who can help me to survive? Interesting thing is, sir, can I survive one day more? 1 hour more? Not to speak of 1 year more. You know, suppose doctor says, if you do this, then you will survive 1 year more. And if you don't, you will die now itself. What do you think we choose? Instantaneously, only we want to survive. That is most natural. Why it is natural? Because that's our nature. But anything opposite to it is not our nature. 2 points is worship of the ancestors and fear of these tremendous forces of nature. And now, there are so many scientists have come up trying to demolish the idea God is a delusion, religion is a delusion, Richard Dawkins, God delusion. But who will be deluded when I am on deathbed? Am I going to read Richard Dawkins' God delusion? Or am I going to listen to somebody who says, do not worry, you are not going to die, this body of course will die, and there is something beyond this life. We all want that assurance. Even if we have to suffer also, we don't want to die. So survival with suffering is first preference than death. Of course, survival with the prospect of being very happy in future, that would be of course the first instinct. But if there is no choice, we would like to even suffer, but to be aware, to survive, to live, to exist. That is the most natural thing. So Swamiji says now, these two views, though they seem to be contradictory, can be reconciled on a third basis, which to my mind is the real germ of religion, and that I propose to call the struggle to transcend the limitations of the senses. Most wonderful theory Swami Vivekananda had put forth. Even today, among most of these anthropologists, sociologists, who are studying human societies, and even they are clinging to this only. I'll give an instance. I was trying to study, are there any other theories other than what Swami Vivekananda had proposed here? There was not. So I was reading a few days back, and then the latest theory was, you know, the people depended upon agriculture. And agriculture totally depends upon one fact, the sun and the rain. If the sun is there too much, or it is not there, or the rain is too little or too much, their whole life is endangered. Because there are no crops, there would be no survival at all in those days. Mind you, we have to forget a lot of our present experience. In those days, people have not found out the way to store things. For a short time only they could store. Now we could store for years and years and years together. And in some forms, we can store for hundreds of years together. We have found out the methods. In those days, these powers of nature, especially the sun and the rain. So what do you think the farmer will be praying? Oh rain God, please come. Then what happens? The prayer is very instinctual. It is not that he says, what shall I do now? Shall I pray or not? No. Instantaneously pray. Oh Lord, everything is going to dogs, so will you please help me? Either to produce rain or to stop the rain. Because if it is a torrential rain, both are harmful. This is one of the things, this instinct to survive is the reason why we pray to different gods. At that time, everyone was imbued with superstition They used to think the tree has got a spirit, the sun is a spirit, the cloud is a spirit. And if you look at the Vedic hymns, cloud is a spirit. The sun for Hindus is not what is called burning gas, as scientists used to think. It's Pratyaksha Devata. They named it as, you know, polytheism, seeing God everywhere, and imputing spirit to the plants, to the mountains, to the rivers, and to the all this natural phenomena, everything. In Vedic culture, I can tell you, every single phenomena experienced in life is nothing but the manifestation of the spirits. Simple example, many Hindus know it, I am only reminding you, when there is a thunderbolt. Who hurls the thunderbolt? Indra. Who is in charge of the rains? You know, in the Krishna's life, when Krishna advised people to worship, why do you worship Indra? That you worship only the Govardhana mountain. Then Indra sent torrential rains. And then Krishna was compelled to lift up the Govardhana mountain. By reading these things from the outside world, those who are not familiar with Hindu spiritual ideals, they think, oh, these are our very superstitious type of people who did not know, and that is why they did not understand anything of nature. Now science has clearly explained everything. It is all nothing but natural phenomena. But for Hindus, they are far more superior than any of these people. The whole world is nothing but divine. It's a manifestation of Brahman. Brahman became nature. Another word for nature is Brahman. So even today, we think we understand. No, we do not understand. Because there is a realm, there is something beyond our grossest experiences. And unless we transcend the sense organs, we will never be able to get that special type of knowledge. They think all these Vedic hymns and all those things, it is a prayers out of fear. Oh God of rain, oh God of shine, you control everything. Please be gracious to me and all those things. That is where Swamiji steps in and says, these two views seem to be totally different from each other. What is it? Ancestor worship and deification of the nature seem to be totally different. Whereas Swamiji says they can be reconciled, harmonized, and this is the only fact of life. What is it? It is the struggle to transcend the limitations of the senses. Each one of us instinctively want to get beyond the limitations of the senses. Incidentally, all the scientific developments that are taking place, the vast telescope, the finest tuned microscope, what are they, really speaking? They are nothing but extension of our sense organs. What is extension of sense organs? To go beyond the present limitations of the sense organs. What are these spectacles? It is nothing but going beyond the limits of my power of eyesight. So any invention you talk about, it is nothing but to go beyond the limitations of the senses. Any type of development in science is nothing but an attempt to go beyond the limitations of the senses. What does that mean? If you go beyond the limitation of the senses, what do the senses really do? They have got only two functions. Outside, to protect you from all so-called suffering. Limitation means, another word for limitation is suffering. What is the second extension? How can I extend my experience of happiness, pleasure, joy? Whatever we do, whether we go through religion, through science, through art, through any means that we have available for us, only two things. I want to go beyond the limitations of that which limits our existence, that which limits our ananda, that which limits our sat, and that which limits our ananda. And I want to be fully aware of this. This is the kernel, the essence of the whole Vedanta. Summarizing this, Swami Vivekananda says, all of you are familiar with it. Each soul is potentially divine. What is the meaning of potential divinity? As we are at this moment, we are constrained, limited. Limited by what? our potential divinity is limited by what? Only senses, body and mind. And what are all the attempts that we are making? Well, you take it, aesthetic expansion, scientific expansion, economical expansion, any type of expansion you name, what is the ultimate goal of this expansion? You expand means what? You go beyond the present limitations of the body and the mind. And by implication, what does that mean? What does it mean to go beyond the limitations of the body? Because body is another name for limitation. Mind is another name for limitation. If I want to go beyond the limitations of the body and mind, what does that mean? I must go beyond the idea that I am the body and I am the mind. That's what Swamiji is telling. I propose to call it a struggle to transcend the limitations of the senses. Whichever of these is the case, one thing is certain, that man tries to transcend the limitations of the senses. He cannot remain satisfied with his senses. He wants to go beyond them. Interesting question, you know. Why does man want to go beyond the limitations of the senses? Because sense is another name for limitation. We have to keep certain ideas crystal clear in our mind. Senses. Each sense is a limitation. How many sense organs we have? 5. These are called jnanendriyas. Senses that which bring knowledge to us. Each sense organ is absolutely limited. Not little limited. Absolutely limited. What do I mean? You are looking at me. Which sense organ is functioning? The eye. Suppose, you know, you can't go on looking at me for all the time. Now what then you have to? Close your eyes. So what is a sense? Is another name for severe limitation. The eye cannot hear. So when you had enough of me, say, okay, let me close my eyes. Oh, ear, please take over and you see for me. Can the ear see for me? Can any sense organ do the function of any other sense organ? In that sense, it is absolutely limited. Not only it is limited in its own natural function, it is also totally limited with regard to the function of every other sense organ. That's a very interesting point. Please keep it in mind. To me, Swamiji continues, it seems very natural that the first glimpse of religion should come through dreams. The first idea of immortality man may well get through dreams. Is that not a most wonderful state? Even during the sleep state, when the body is apparently dead, the mind goes on with all its intricate workings. What wonder then that men will at once come to the conclusion that when this body is dissolved forever, the same working will go on. This is also another theory which has gained quite an amount of prominence. Not only Swamiji, this is not exclusive idea of Swamiji. It has also gained ground among many other thinking people. Dreams, it's a wonderful state. Even now we understand very little about dreams. What is the first idea that we have about dreams? Do you know what is the idea? It is the tremendous amount of freedom that with the mind we can be whatever we want, we can do whatever we want, we can go wherever we want, we can practically do magic with our mind. Very little research is done about dreams by the modern scientific community. But one thing is very certain, the body is apparently lying, absolutely useless, just surviving. But the mind, with the body, now in this waking state, suppose you wish to go to India or to Australia, can you? But in dream, 1 second, the desire comes. Where do you find yourself? Anywhere you want, on the moon, or underneath in Patala, wherever you want. That means you have transcended two things. Limitation is of two types. It's a very interesting idea in Vedanta philosophy. Limitation means two. Spatial limitation and time limitation. So if I am here, even if I start right now to reach London, it will take at least 40 minutes to 1 hour. But in dream, what is London? What is India? what is Australia, what is Mars, I can be anywhere I want. Within twinkling of a second, I can be anywhere. With that one simple thought, one simple idea or imagination, I am transcending at once two things, time and space. How many times I can go to India and come back and do anything that I want? Not only that, I can, whatever I imagine, that is the only reality that happens. I have absolute freedom in dreams to dream, to imagine whatever I like. But the tragedy is, can I? Very interesting point, you know. It has nothing to do with the talk I am giving. It is just a by-thought about dreams. How many of us have so many unfulfilled desires? And all these desires can definitely be fulfilled in the dream. But can we? It is severely limited by the limitation imposed by whom? By ourselves. Because even to dream, we have to have that earlier preparation. Without preparation, you cannot dream. That's why there is a science. There are some people who say, we prepare you. You want to go to Himalayas? You want to go on a mountain trekking? You want to go to this Svargaloka and enjoy the Apsarasa? Yes, we will give you training. So that your imagination still continues to work in your dreams, so that the moment you think about it, then you are actually experiencing that thing. I hope you are getting what I am talking about. In dreams, we can transcend time and space to a great extent, not to infinite extent, to a great extent. For it is far superior than our waking state limitation. For the devotees of Sri Ramakrishna, I am going to give you this simple example. Which devotee of Sri Ramakrishna or which devotee of God doesn't ardently long to have, if I only can see Sri Ramakrishna, if I can hear Sri Ramakrishna singing, and if I can be in the lap of Holy Mother, and she is showing her love to me, and she is feeding me very lovingly. Even if you can dream that one, after waking up, you will be in ecstasy for days and days and days together. Is it not? Why are you not getting in the dreams? Because there is a secret. What is the secret? It is not only your surface desire. The desire must be subconscious. Because what comes in the dream? Not your surface desire, but the subconscious desire. For the desire to go to subconscious, you will have to do a lot of spiritual practice while you are in the waking state. That's why go on reading these mythologies, the lives of biographies of great saints, and go on doing it, go on doing it, go on doing it. And one day, in your dreams, many, many of these things would come true. And the most interesting point there, here is the question. Is a dream or a reality? Many people, without thinking, they give that answer, oh, it is a dream. But from which experience point of view you are labeling it as a dream? From the waking experience point of view. But when you are dreaming, did you ever question, am I dreaming? You will never do. It is a, what is the idea, that what is the point I want to make? Waking state is a separate type of experience. Dream state is a separate type of state of experience. And deep sleep is a separate type of state of experience. Never ever compare those three, excepting to learn certain lessons. Never equate, never judge those other two states only from the point of the waking state. This is one of the greatest lessons Vedanta teaches us. When you are having a dream, it is a separate state and it is a much better state. And when you are in deep sleep, it is far better state. And it is compared to the state of non-duality. That's why so much of bliss is there. No duality. And you see, you are so peaceful in that state. Where no husband exists, no wife exists, no king exists, no beggar exists, no scholar exists, no illiterate person exists, no healthy person exists, no sick person exists. Even when we are in the direst state, the doctor comes and declares, you have only a few months to live. Does the man go to sleep or not? And when he is in the state of deep sleep, What is the state of his experience? Is he afraid of the cancer or whatever declaration of death? Is an absolute bliss. The only thing from the Vedantic point of view, the lesson we learn from dreams, just as all the experiences that we experience in the dream state are unreal compared to the so-called experience of the waking state, so also the experiences which we think are real in the waking state are equally unreal. And it is not only unreal when we realize God, it is really unreal even while we are dreaming, either real or unreal. And you are here, and hearing my talk, you go into a dream state, and you dream that you are at home. Where are you? So long as you are dreaming, where are you? At home only, because nothing of what I am talking is ever going. The point is that these are very interesting states. Only Vedanta philosophy studies all these three phenomena and categorically declares all these three phenomena is equally unreal. Why? Because one contradicts the reality of the other two. That which is contradicted at any time is unreal. Whatever, what is real, that which is never contradicted. What is unreal, that which is contradict. So whatever experience we have in this world, waking state, dreamless state, all these three are totally contradicted. One is contradicting the other. As simple as that. By that definition, all the three are equally unreal. That is why the great Shankaracharya has divided human experience or any type of experience into three categories. Or he says, three types of realities are three types of truths. Paramarthika Satyam, Vyavaharika Satyam, Pratibhasika Satyam. Truth, reality is never ever contradicted, uncontradictable. God, because he is unchanging. Vyavaharika means I am talking to you are listening to me, hopefully you are in the Vyavaharika world. Phenomenal experience. Waking state. What is the second state? Pratibhasika. Pratibhasika means what? Is like seeing something in a dream, seeing your reflection in a mirror, or watching a movie. You know that you are watching it. You are experiencing it. At the same time, you know it is not real. Upon waking up, that is not real. That was real when you were there. That is not real because is means present tense. Present tense means what? You are in the waking state. This is what Swami Vivekananda is trying to tell. Here is how a glimpse of limitlessness. What does a dream represent? Less of limitation, more of freedom. Even dream is limited. Why is it limited? Not only it is limited by your imagination, it is limited by the duration also. Because you cannot go on dreaming forever. So you have to wake up at some point or the other. That is, the limitation comes to an end very soon. But even during dreaming state also, each one of us, even though we know that our dream is exclusively our own creation, and yet we cannot create what we really desire. Otherwise, you know what happens? If we could dream whatever we desire to dream, nobody would ever want to come back to this waking state. Yes. If we can have that power to dream whatever we want, then we will be in heaven all the time. Because first point is, we can be whatever we want, and we can get whatever we want whenever we go to dream. And secondly, because we get that state of experience which gives us only joy and nothing else, because we get what we want, we would never like to wake up from that dream and be forever only in that dream state. Now, an aside point, there is a beautiful Upanishad, it's called Taittiriya Upanishad. And these things are beautifully described there, what I am talking about. And incidentally, the Jnana Yoga of Swami Vivekananda is nothing but exposition of various ideas found in these Upanishads only. Even the idea of immortality I will give just as an example, Chandogya Upanishad, 6th chapter, there is this, Sadeva Saumya Idam Agre Asit Sat. Existence alone was there in the beginning, before the creation started, O my dear friend. That is the statement. Then the whole Upanishad is an exposition of what that Sutra Vakya really means. Existence, before it was there. What is the beginning of Swamiji is telling it? The idea of immortality. What is religion? It is an attempt to go beyond the limitations of the sense organ. Can you have sense organs without limitation? It is an impossibility. Can you have a body which lives forever? Even you will not want it. When you are 150 years old, I'm very generous, you know. 150 years old, would you like to go on living? No. You know what you will want? I want to die and to be reborn as young. That's what we always dream about. So this is the idea to go beyond all limitation. That means I want to become what? Unlimited. And unlimitedness and body-mind would not go together. Why? Because body and mind is another name for limited. Through the limited, I want to become unlimited. I want to retain both limited and the unlimited. That is an absurd idea. Why is it that we all long? That is the question Swamiji is posing. He will bring it out later on in detail. He is posing because unless there is something already within, it will never come out later on. If the mango-ness is not in the mango seed, it will never become a mango tree. Whatever is in the seed is in its full-blown glory. It is already there. Why every creature, not only human being, even an insect doesn't want to die. And even an insect doesn't want to be unhappy. They want pleasure. They want joy. More and more and more. Evolution is another way of trying to evolve in existence and in ananda, in the form of knowledge. The brain evolves. It becomes more and more and more complex. That is what modern scientists call evolution, the idea of evolution. What is the point we are talking? Dreams, a dream state is a much better state, much far higher, because it is unlimited. And incidentally, the idea of deep sleep, Sushupti, is far more unlimited. Because there, even in dream, time and space exist. But the power is very great. But in the dreamless state, deep sleep state, we go completely all the limitations. What is the limitation? Time and space. There is no time and space in Sushupti. That's why you can never ask one question when we are in deep sleep. How long did you sleep? You cannot answer that question. Because when you gone beyond time, how much time were you beyond time? Can you answer that question? We are calculating the time from our waking point of experience. This is what Swami says. Every human being dreams. When does he dream? Only at night? All the time we are dreaming. If we dream at daytime, what is it called? Daydream. And when we dream at night, it is called dream. That is what we call. Throughout the 24 hours, we are cycling through waking state, dream state, even during this few minutes of my talk. I am very generous. In a few minutes, not few minutes. It may look like we want yoga for you. Yes, even during this period, how much time were you awake? How much time you are dreaming? How much time you are in the dreamless state? It is not easy to focus on anybody's thought. How do we know? Because if you could focus on my talk continuously, then you go and sit in the shrine room and focus on Sri Ramakrishna, you will have perfect meditation samadhi. But after a few seconds, what happens? You become restless. Now, I cannot expect, if you cannot even concentrate on Sri Ramakrishna, that you will concentrate on my talk. I have no hopes, you know, I have given up all hopes long before. It can be developed. What is the idea here? Waking state is extremely limited. Dream state is much less limited. And dreamless state, called deep sleep state, is far beyond all those things. And yet, they are limited by one another. Waking is limited by dream and deep sleep. And dream is limited by waking and deep sleep. Deep sleep is limited by waking and dreaming. But those experiences give us a glimpse into what we are longing in our waking state, cannot really adequately express in our waking state. Yes, it is possible. There is a state where I can extend my sense organs. I can go anywhere. I can go in a very fast time travel and I can experience whatever I want. These are beautiful ideas Swami Vivekananda was bringing. I will close this talk with one thought. Why was Swamiji bringing all those things? Only to prove one thing. What is it? You man, you are potentially divine. All these experiences that you are going through, your longings, your desires, including your frustrations, including your death, is all a precursor, as it were, of the things you are going to achieve tomorrow. Tomorrow means what? In future. These are the beautiful ideas. To summarize what we discussed today, Swamiji brought this idea, the necessity of religion, and he wants to prove it is not the necessity of religion. The religion is the very constitution of human being. What is religion? It is an attempt to go beyond the limitations of senses. To go beyond the limitation, any type of limitation. And why do we want to go? Because that is our real nature. This is the way Swami Vivekananda is slowly trying to lead us step by step by step. We will discuss it in our future class. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.